LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
So, greetings, everybody. You join us for a podcast on retirement, but before you turn down the volume or turn off, I can promise you this is a really interesting subject. And I say that not just because I care about it. I'm Simon Chinnery, head of DC Client Solutions at LGIM, but I have two experts with me, and we're going to talk about some research that we did for members of the public around attitudes to retirement. And I hope, well, I trust that you will find this interesting. So I've got Veronica and Jeanette. Veronica is head of the investment solutions, DC Investment Solutions at LGIM, and Jeanette is managing director of Ignition House, an author of this report. So let me just tell you a little bit about the report, about what we were doing, introduction, which is that we wanted to start with thinking about retirement, not from the investment design side, but actually what was people's attitude to retirement. And with that in mind, we ran a number of workshops with clients, and we really kind of just listened to them and took it from there. And then at some point we needed to test all this. So Veronica, I've described it really badly. I'm sure you can describe this a lot better.
In a nutshell, that's very similar to what you've just said. And we talked to a number of clients, figuring out kind of what next for us, what next in terms of the retirement overall, in terms of what we're providing to our clients and to our members, and very quickly figured out that actually there is this growing gap, which is the advice gap for people who have some defined contribution savings, but at the same time, not enough to pay a couple of grand to an independent financial advisor, and currently they're not really served in the market much at all. So we're hearing this from the clients, we're hearing this from our helpline when people are calling up and saying that, well, I really don't know where to start with all this. And then we decided to look at the demographic picture and to look at the just at our members and at our customers and see what's needed. And then we very quickly realized that actually, with all the abstract conversations about perfect retirement solutions and retirement products, we're kind of forgetting about who the clients are and who are the people retiring in the next 5-10 years. And they're far from kind of financing all their retirement from their defined contribution savings. They have very complicated picture with some retained DB, other savings. They typically would own their homes, etc., etc. So all of this gets very personal, gets very difficult for individuals, and we really need to sit down and figure out how they think about this. This is where Jeanette comes in.
I mean, just on that point, because I mean, we hear repeatedly people say, oh, retirement, you know, outcomes, they're really complicated. There's so many moving parts, almost as an excuse to not do anything. I mean, that's a bit unfair, but it's sort of almost putting it in the too hard box. And one thing, Jeanette, that came out of this very clearly for me was, I mean, the trite thing about one size doesn't fit all, but behind that was, okay, there isn't a default, but actually we can simplify this, can't we?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there isn't a single solution that's going to be suitable for everybody. This particular group of people who are now coming through to retirement, as Veronica said, have all sorts of different things going on in their lives, their home, DB entitlement, the state pension, which forms an incredibly important part of their provision in retirement, and something that most people actually of that age don't realise. But what they're looking for is some sort of middle ground between a one-size-fits-all approach and you know, four options that they see time and time again from providers, and when they go and see PensionWise and all the literature and the things that they read in the newspapers, that basically they get to grips with really quickly. Okay, I can buy an annuity, I can do drawdown, I can leave it, I can take it all out. But how does that fit in with me and my lifestyle and what I want to do? And that's the piece that's really missing, that sort of personalization of blending different solutions. And another thing that they don't really get from what they're reading today is that they can do a mix and match approach, that, you know, they can have a bit of everything. And some of the things that they'll need in terms of a steady income for the rest of their life will actually be delivered through different sources to their DC pension. They have the underpin of a state pension, and many of them have the underpin of a final salary or career average pension that will go up in line with inflation. So for a lot of people, some of the basics are already fundamentally covered.
Right. And we kind of know that's going to change over time, and that, you know, future generations will have different savings, and certainly DB will be fading. But so I guess that in a way, I understand why people are saying it's complicated, because there are multiple sources of assets. But actually, even with the group that you interviewed, which I think was the 55-year-olds to 65, is that right?
Yeah, so we did some in-depth discussions lasting from around an hour and a half to nearly 2.5 hours with 45 people, all of which who had a DC pension. And they were generally speaking Legal and General members, but they were very representative of the general population. I mean, I've personally spoken to getting on for 1,500 people since pension freedoms were announced about their retirement decisions of this particular age group, sort of 55 plus to 65s. And they were no different to anybody else. Everything that we've heard in this piece of research is very consistent with the kinds of things that I've heard from the retirement outcomes review work that we did for the FCA, from the work that we did for Nest on the blueprint. It's all coming together and delivering a very similar picture. And so for these people, you know, generally speaking, they found that they could put their life into four pots, buckets, whatever you want to call them. They could consider what was going to happen to them in the early years of retirement, what they might need for their later years when they might have care, whether they'd need some money for rainy days or holidays, and whether they'd want to leave any money for their kids. And if you start to break it down into life events like that, suddenly things become a lot easier to mix and match together.
Well, we'll go into that in a little bit more detail in a moment, but because I think that really is a kind of simplification that you know, I was talking about earlier. But Veronica, I mean, that sense of, you know, from putting the investment structures and ideas at the back, I mean, was that quite hard to do?
An interesting question. I don't think so. I think this is not what we traditionally as an industry do. But in a way, the investment side is the easiest one. This is what we do day to day. And actually, if we ask the right question, we then can almost back solve it from the investment point of view.
Right.
So whereas actually, if you start with the investment point of view, you then dictate how people should view their retirement and what are the optimal rates of withdrawal, what are the optimal measures of this and that, which they might not relate to. And that is a much tougher sell.
Okay. And I mean, just to reiterate, I guess we started from a point of looking at all these people that, even though they've got different sources of money, they're actually relatively well off, perhaps in relationship to future generations in terms of DC savings, certainly. But it feels like that for them, the issues are the same as what you're saying, Jeanette, really, because we're human. So we kind of put off making difficult decisions, and it's all very difficult. So we might dream about retirement, but we don't actually really want to get down to the nitty gritty. But I mean, and I'll ask you in a second about how you ease people into that so that they didn't shut down. But I just want to reemphasize this point about the target that we're looking at, which is this unadvised market. That actually, even if they do have quite a bit of assets, they're kind of not looking to go and get advice. We as an industry seem to spend a lot of time looking at the people who are going to get advice that you know have, you know, maybe significant assets, but But, you know, why did we start, Veronica, why did we start at this kind of lower end of the market?
Well, one obvious reason is because we see it growing quite significantly. Because, yes, kind of currently you sort of see more of a binary picture with the DC assets. Either people have quite a bit and then they have actually quite a bit of DB and other things and then it's all on to IFAs, or they actually have very small pots. And this is what in majority we're seeing, some pots of 10, 15, 20K. And obviously there isn't a question of advice or actually even any complicated choice, solutions. Yeah. Indeed. But what we're seeing is this fairly rapid growth of the middle there. And we definitely expect that to be the main driver in the next 5 years. And we have very little to offer to them at the moment.
And okay, so let's get on to the research. And something I knew nothing about, but now I feel like a little mini expert, which is the blob tree. Jeanette, can you talk about the blob tree?
So one of the reasons why I wanted to do this research and was quite excited by the concept and the way that you were approaching it was that this very much came from a sort of customer-centric rather than a product-centric point of view. So it's about understanding people and what drives them and motivates them and how they feel about things rather than putting a product design in front of them and saying, here it is, do you like it or leave it? And so the first real objective for us to do was to try and get people to open up and think about how they do feel about retirement. And obviously these are 55 to 65-year-olds. The decision is getting closer for many of them. And we used a technique called the blob tree. So it's basically a little picture. It's a tree and it's got various people on it with different sort of characteristics. So there's a happy characteristic of like a family sort of at the top branch holding each other, hugging each other. And then there are some negative characteristics. So there's a picture of a little man hanging himself, that somebody's swinging, then somebody cutting off a branch, somebody climbing off a tree, there's somebody falling off a tree. And it's a well-tested device that's been used in psychology in all sorts of situations just to get people to sort of open up in a non-threatening way to talk about their feelings and emotions. And what we found from this, you know, people circling how they, the little characters that sort of represent their feelings about retirement, when they're thinking about retirement and the things that they're going to be doing and you know, the lifestyle that they're going to have, aspirationally, they're circling happy people. So people at the top of the tree with their families, looking out to the future, doing nice things. When they're thinking about how they're going to make the decisions about retirement and how they're going to live in retirement, then by and large, we saw them circling the negative figures. So the guy hanging themselves, people swinging, people trying to climb up the tree, people right at the bottom of the tree, really starting off on that journey. And basically, they were talking about the, you know, the sorts of information and help they've been getting already to try and put them on the path to making these decisions. And again, they felt like they'd been left swinging. That was often a common thing that they said. They're hearing all sorts of things. They're reading all sorts of things. It's giving them facts, but it's not helping them to make a decision about what they want to do with their money.
Right, right. And so how did you then walk them through to the next stage to help them work out a way in which they could link the bottom of the tree to the top of the tree?
It was quite a journey.
And it's not a magic money tree, is it?
It's not a magic money tree. It's quite a journey to take people on, because even though these people were sort of on the cusp of retirement, they really hadn't spent that much time thinking about anything other than the holidays and the spending time with kids. So the actual planning side of things, they were pretty scared of. That was a really strong emotion that came out, partly because they hear a lot of negative messages in the media. People aren't saving enough for retirement. You're not saving enough for retirement. You know, big figures about how much they're going to need. And it feels quite scary for them. And they sort of put off. It's a human behaviour. If we're scared about something, then we tend not to face up to it. Yeah. And so they're putting off the planning aspect and sort of hoping for the best. Because as soon as they start to put things down on paper and make the leap into actually doing some real planning, then it feels quite real. And also, we are inbuilt in us, we are procrastinators. We will put off things till it's absolutely necessary. So what we're finding is the time horizon when people start to do their planning is really quite short before their actual retirement date. It's normally about 6 months to a year. Right. Up until then, it's just vague plans. Right. So to actually move them away from this sort of vague notion of what was going to happen, we wanted to sort of get real with them. Mm. And so we did two little exercises, both took about 10 minutes. The first exercise was just to get them to think about the sorts of things that they'd be spending their money on, the absolute essentials of retirement, both in the early years and the later years. And they were a bit reluctant to do this at first. It seemed like a difficult exercise to do, and it would take a bit of time for them to warm up. And then somebody would go, food. And then the floodgates would open, and you would get insurance and pet care and money for the grandkids' birthdays and all sorts of things like that coming out. So we made a big list on a flip chart. And looking at all of the essentials, the things that they would absolutely have to spend the money on. So, you know, council tax would still be there, the gas bill would still be there, phone bills, TV license, all those sorts of things. We then said to them, roughly speaking, how much do you think you would need to live off to fund all of these essentials? Not thinking about the nice holidays or, you know, weddings or anything like that for kids, just the essentials, just the things you need to live off. And we were surprised at the level of consistency that came across the sort of 45 people that we spoke to in the groups and individually. Generally, they were talking about £2,000 a month, so about £24,000 a year. And that's not dissimilar to other figures that are coming out from the industry. The PLSA and others have all sort of come out there or thereabouts. And then the second exercise, which was the real eye-opener, was, okay, so where's this money going to come from?
Yeah.
and so we gave them a piece of paper and we just listed out all of the types of things that they might have. So their house, savings, money that they might get from their state pension, money they might get from final salary pensions, any investments or inheritances. They might have all a little list for them. And then we said, could you roughly say how much this is worth to you today? And one of the biggest eye-openers, I guess, from that exercise for them was actually they had more than they thought.
Right.
And the second eye-opener for us as researchers was, you know, these people are on the cusp of coming up to retirement. And the level of knowledge about some of the things that they will have is pretty poor. So they were really, really good at knowing the value of their house. So they've been on Zoopla and, you know, yep, all those property sites and had a look at that. They were really good at knowing how much was in their savings accounts. But when it came down, they had a pretty good idea how much was in their DC pension. There or thereabouts. But when it comes to how much the state is going to deliver, and how much they might have in any final salary arrangements, they were much more vague about that and found that much more difficult.
Mm. Veronica, I mean, I just bring you in for a second. Did any of that kind of surprise you? Because I know you've done a lot of research, looked at lots of different areas of, you know, financial resources for people.
Partially, yes. So I think the levels of state pensions that are unknown to general public was quite an eye-opener. And as Janet was saying, it was actually much more positive than people expected. I think that we always suspected that there is a lot of forgotten DB. And this is what we're consistently finding from the interviews. This is what you won't find in online surveys and any of the quantitative studies at all. Kind of numbers are very confusing, and statistics from ONS or from pensions regulator is very confusing as well, because we know that 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, a lot of people were in the in DB pension. So where did it all go? Well, a lot of them just have forgotten about this or haven't thought about it. But given the level of pensions now, actually, even those 5 years from 1981 suddenly become quite an asset at the moment. And what we're also finding is that a lot of statistics that we have are about individuals, whereas it's about households in reality. And this is how people make financial decisions. And again, in the household, you are much more likely to have a retained DB pension, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to pick up on the investment bit. I know you touched on that in the end, because what I remember from the research was that that people saw it as a great tool, a helpful way of thinking, but they didn't necessarily link that to investments. But just hold that thought for a second, because the other bit that came out for me was in your research that people seem to put the cash-free bit, tax-free cash, in a very separate sort of mental box to, and then there's my pension. Could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's something that we've seen consistently. I mean, this is not just something that appeared in these 45 people that we spoke to. I mean, I hear this message consistently across the board in all of the research I do in this area. And we've sort of described it as a two-stage event, really. So the decision to take some tax-free cash out at around 55, it's a new thing. So people were quite excited about it. It unlocks some of the issues that they've always had with pensions and that they've been locked away for a very long time. Suddenly they can have access to it. And so it's sort of becoming a new social norm. Like, people are seeing their friends doing it. They're, you know, hearing about colleagues who've gone out and taken their pension money and kind of bought the car, done the house up, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. We've had a lady who was talking to me about the tax-free cash cruise. She goes on cruises every September, you know, when the kids have gone back to school. And she said basically everybody who's on the cruises in September these days has cashed in part of their pension to do it. So it's just becoming a bit of a thing. And obviously the decision to take that money is very quick. I mean, it's often described to me as a no-brainer. And the way that we kind of describe it makes it a no-brainer for people. It's 25%. It's an easy number to understand. It's quite a big chunk of money, even from quite a small pension pot. And the thing they really love about it is the bit that it's tax-free. I mean, it feels like a big win against the government, and everybody loves a win. So they just do it.
And these are people who've been brought up with the ISA, you know, beat the tax man. Yeah. And all that, so I suppose that makes huge sense.
And so there's very little thought, and you know, trying to get them to think about it is really difficult, because we wouldn't make people who were taking £4,000 or £5,000 out of a cash ISA think about whether or not this is going to impact their retirement when they come to, you know, in 15 or 20 years' time. It just wouldn't be a decision that they would even think about. And so why should we think that they think differently about a pension? It's the same thing. Whereas when you get to the second stage, so what to do with the other 75%, that is different. What we're finding is people are not touching the remainder. They're not dipping in. We don't find any serial dippers going on. It's not like they want to cruise next year and they'll do it again. Once they've had their 25% blowout, it's done. And when they get to the 75%, that is a real income decision. And this is when all the thoughts about how am I going to use this money, what am I going to do, what am I going to live off, that's when those kind of things come to the forefront.
And I mean, on that point, you also highlighted that the retirement isn't this, you know, from your interviews and your wider experience, that the mind shift now about retirement isn't just kind of slow down, do little, you know, kind of the old age image of that. There seems to be a very big focus on active years, and then a recognition at some point, you know, we slow down.
Yeah, we do. I mean, if you talk to people about how they see their retirement panning out, they can see themselves mostly, unless there's some real health issues going on, mostly they see themselves having a good sort of 10 years or so of active life. So, you know, and this is when they're going out, they're playing golf, they're cruising, they're, you know, doing all the fun stuff that they want to do. And then they look at their parents and how their parents' lives have gone, and they sort of see there's a slowing down. And obviously it will vary from family to family, depending on how they think their health situation is going to be. But typically speaking, around 75 seems to be the consensus age when people start to think that you stop doing the things, you know, the everyday active things, and then you start to slow down and become more housebound.
And I mean, Veronica, I mean, that has implications, doesn't it, for any kind of investment design, decision making. I suppose one of the things that came up for me was that we should almost have a sort of big don't panic sign over this, that this, you know, you come to retirement. Yes, it may be a point in time where you don't go to work on a Monday, and it may not, because I think there's quite a lot of people doing, you know, part-time work, etc. But for the sake of this, it's almost the don't panic is there is no need to do something immediately. I mean, you talked about the cash, the tax-free, but really everything else is kind of wait and see, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. There isn't a one-off point at which you suddenly stop working and your life crumbles. It's more about the flexibility that people now have, and they view it this way as well. And we see the number of people actually working part-time, going, not working, then returning to work after a few years, increasing and increasing. So it stopped being that one-off point in time. And another thing is, as you and Jeanette mentioned, this attitude to retirement is not a uniform thing. Again, it's very tempting for our industry to think about it. Okay, you just need 2/3 of your pre-retirement salary and that's it. Yes. Whereas actually the needs change throughout retirement, and almost everyone looks forward to those active years where you actually can spend that money and enjoy and see your grandchildren and do whatever you actually enjoy doing a bit more, whereas then you kind of settle down a bit, and then there are later years. I think that Australians lovingly call it something like, you know, go-go years, slow-go years, and no-go years, which is a bit depressing, but in a way describes that, you know, there isn't this uniform, bland state. People live through it.
And I mean, I guess as, you know, as an industry, we really need to listen to this, don't we? Because that kind of slightly we know better than you attitude of now you need to sit down and you need to secure an income and you need to think about exactly how much you're going to spend. Is it going to be a drawdown of 5% or 6%? And it's all gobbledygook to people. And it's a huge turnoff, isn't it? I mean, from everything you both just described, you know, I want to have a bit of fun. I'm not going to go crazy and blow it all. I'm kind of thinking I've got some active years, the things I want to do, and at the same time, I do realise that if I'm going to live, you know, another 20 years or whatever, then yeah, I need to do a bit of planning. Is that came up in your research? I think.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't hear anybody saying they were going to take it all out and blow it. Quite the opposite, and we've never heard that. I mean, people laugh at the sort of Lamborghini thing. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll have a bit of fun, but the rest of it will go for income. And actually, the flexibility of is going to be really important to them. I mean, yeah. That classic story from a lady who had pension. I was speaking to her as part of a study where we're following them over time, and she'd given up work and she'd made all of her plans and she'd actually bought an annuity and she was very happy with it. I spoke to her a year later. She was quite upset that she'd made that decision. You think, well, why? Annuity is a regular, steady income for life. It's what you said you wanted. Well, what had happened was she'd spent 3 months at home with her husband. He'd driven her absolutely nuts, and she'd gone back to work. And now she has an income and doesn't need the annuity income at all, and is clearly upset that there's no flexibility in the system to accommodate for that.
Right. And I mean, this really, an overriding theme here was the need for flexibility.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, and yeah. I mean, Veronica, in all the research you've looked at, I mean, that does seem to be what people want.
Absolutely. And also, we shouldn't forget that actually circumstances change as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's all very good and well to plan and make long-term decisions, whereas you don't know what is going to happen. And this is one of the reasons why people don't plan that far in advance at all, because, you know, we can tell them, well, you should do, and they will laugh and say, well, we don't know what's going to happen. We know that planning 5 or 10 years in advance, given the health situation, given that it's all very fluid at my work, at my partner's work, it's all useless.
Yeah. And I mean, we're getting to the end of this, but I guess that from one of the things that is kind of traveling in parallel with all this is the kind of regulatory focus, now the government focus on what retirement would look like for people who perhaps don't take advice. And I think, you know, we've seen the FCA talk about pathways. And do you want to just comment on that in a moment in terms of what we just said about flexibility and this idea that somebody's got to choose a pathway? That sounds a little inflexible to me.
So, yeah, I would probably very much agree with what Pensions and Lifetime Savings Association was saying about this. That you know, yes, it's all well thought through, and yes, the idea of kind of determined pathways is very sensible. But in reality, people would like flexibility, and also because their circumstances are invariably quite different and quite personal, they probably almost all need a bit of that and a bit of that, rather than just one, like taking out my cash within 3 years. Well, I might want to take a bit of cash because I want to go on a cruise or do up my house. But at the same time, as Jeanette was saying, I still have plans for later income, and then I need a bit of flexibility around that because I might go back to work, might come back into retirement, etc. Yeah. So the idea of this predetermined pathways at 65 is probably is a good step to recognizing that there isn't one default, but it's probably not enough in terms of providing the needed flexibility.
If you look at the way that people, you know, think about their savings and their finances, I mean, they're already in their own head sort of mentally jam-jarring money in different ways. They don't put it all into one thing or another thing. So when we've even talked to, you know, the people in this study, when we asked them what were they doing with their money, you know, they have some that's tucked away for sort of rainy days and holidays. That's how they would describe it. It's the emergency funds. And, you know, that's in a very different thing, perhaps, to the things that they've tucked away that were going to cater for their more longer term needs. So they're already sort of jam jarring stuff up in different ways and are able to move that money flexibly if they want to. So if they're doing that in their personal finances, why don't we let them do that in their pensions?
Yeah, and I love that. And I guess that you know, it for me, really emphasises the point that actually, you know, we wring our hands about the lack of engagement, but everything that you've described sounds like these people, given the right kind of stimulus and help, are actually, they're really engaged.
I think it's going to be a challenge to get the sort of 50-year-olds thinking about this. The decision horizon is way too far away. Yep. And I think it's going to be really difficult to get people to sort of start to think about these sorts of things when they're just after their tax-free cash. Because as I said, they don't do that when they're just taking money out of their bank account. It's an ask to get them to do it when they're taking out pensions. But when they're heading towards that point in time when their income is going to stop, and that's quite a scary situation for them because then they really are going to be living off their accumulated means at that point in time, then yes, they are going to engage with this. They really love it. And in fact, one of the people I was speaking to said, this is great because I've just retired and I've been through all of, you know, I was made redundant. I went through all of this. I had to do it on my own. What this would give me is the backing that a good company like Legal & General, you know, with a solid foundation, has done it for me, because that gives me the comfort that I know it's been done properly. At the moment, I've just kind of done it myself and I'm not really sure one way or the other whether it's right or wrong. So all of these things, you know, as tools would really help people making that decision. And then what we find when we talk to them about what they would do, you know, going forwards is they would really engage. I mean, we worry about no engagement, but once this is what you're going to be living off, then people are going to be, you know, looking at it on a really regular basis. And almost the problem that we might have is that they're over-engaging and panicking too much when the market's going up and down, and we need to be careful about communications and how we position that to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a nice challenge to have from where we've where we're coming from anyway. So, I mean, final thoughts. It feels like a framework of a helpful framework for individuals at the right moment to start thinking about their options, but also quite positive that actually the message seems to be, you know, you have time, don't panic. B, you probably got more options than you think. Now, I appreciate that may change as future generations come along, but you know, we'll just focus on the people retiring now. And I suppose lastly, see that actually there can be a sense of proportion here, you know, not that it's that they can use the existing planning that they've already done, this household savings and, you know, the way they think about their household budget, in a way which isn't asking them to suddenly become financial experts, know about investments, you know. It's not a sort of a leap into the dark.
Normally when I do these conversations and I'm testing a financial product design, and people are talking about pensions or they're talking about buying annuities or doing drawdowns, I mean, the common words that they use, it's a minefield. It's so confusing. It's so full of jargon. At not one point in the discussions that we had where we focused on how do you want to live your life? What do you want to do with your money? You know, here's four ways that you can mix and match your funds and then we'll do the rest. They were very, very pleased, like really pleased, that a solution like this was coming along because they could understand it. It was in layman's language. There was no jargon. There was no technical details there. Everything that we presented in front of them, they could do. And it was flexible. So yeah. They were worried, like, oh, if I do it, if I make a mistake, that will be the end of the world. Yes. And we're saying to them, no, don't worry, because if your circumstances change or you make a mistake or it's not working out how you think it's going to work out, you can change it any time you like.
Yeah, and that's the point you were making, Veronica, isn't it? That it's, you know, that key is flexibility because life events happen. Okay, so we come to the end and just leaves me to thank Jeanette and Veronica for what I found a really interesting discussion. I hope the audience have also found this food for thought. There is a link in the episode description to the research that you can read in full. The title is Four Pots for Your Retirement, Creating Personalized Defaults. Enjoy.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.